Hello, and welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer. And hi, Mauricio.
Hello, wife.
Oh, my God.
You know, can I be your girlfriend then, yeah, maybe, just for today?
Of course. You can be my novia.
Oh, my.
Jess, as the wife, I was told that I may call our guest Mao. Is that I say that right?
Yes.
That's our nickname, Mao.
Yes.
Look, you can have it too. It's fine.
As long as you know that I am esposa.
Yes. Right? Esposa.
Okay. That's great. I'm clapping for myself in this moment because I've never been a wife and I have to be a wife at this time. So as long as that's cool with everybody in this Zoom room, my dog is okay with it. He's always wanted a father, and that's where we are today. And now you already know who Mao is. You already know that he was on Broadway in On Your Feet. He is a sensation. He is a recording artist. He has a phenomenal career. We're talking about you, Mao, but we also don't want to talk about your phenomenal career today. Is that okay?
I love it. Yeah.
Oh, he loves it. Oh my gosh. Our boyfriend husband loves it.
Thank goodness. Yes. Mao, all Jess and I do like to talk about in our copious spare time here in the Coco Roro Pandemois is true crime. We're angry women. We're uppity women. And we wonder what's the next step in our rage. Maybe it's murder. We don't know. We sometimes wonder, are we serial killers? Like, why? What is our fascination station with it? So we are wondering, Mao, why are you interested in true crime, if indeed you are? And if so, why are you? And why do you think we theater types are in general? Do you have a theory? Well,
growing up, I mean, first and foremost, I've always been attracted to all these serial killer movies. And then my brother, who's 7 years older than me, when I was 10, took me with him to see The Silence of the Lambs. When I was an old kid. How do you explain that to a 10?
Oh, honey.
Oh, I know. You say, it's an Oscar-winning film, A. Yeah.
That how you explain it to a 10-year-old? So, honey, it's an Oscar. Honey, well, don't worry about it.
Yet, but it won the Oscar.
10.
And then I became obsessed with specifically that movie. And then I realized that I really, really loved mysteries and the serial killer stories. And I think being an actor, we're drawn to those characters and that psychology because we're always in search of understanding the psyche.
So before I dive in, Mao, you're originally from Monterrey, Nuevo León.
Yes.
Mexico, right? Okay.
Yes.
So we want to welcome everybody and, of course, our phenomenal guests to today's episode. We want credit where credit is due. We always like to tell you where we got our information. And today's information is from Wikipedia and biography.com. And we are digging into the brutal and, quite frankly, completely mind-boggling murder of well-known singer Selena.
Yes.
And though this murder took place in the United States, the international waves that it continues to make to this day, well, I think are huge and continue to be huge, even though it happened so many years ago. It's just one of those unfathomable things where you think to yourself, holy crap, how could that happen to someone? First of all, so young, so beautiful, so successful, and at the hands of somebody who was supposed to love her. So for those who might not be familiar who are listening today, Selena Quintanilla made her recording debut in the 80s. She went on to become an award-winning recording artist in the Latin music industry with albums like Amor Prohibido and Selena Live. And in 1995, she was murdered by the founder of her fan club. And her last album, Dreaming of You, was released posthumously in 1995. So before we get to the moment Selena lost her life at the hands of one of her biggest fans, we're just going to give you a little bit of background on her early years. Now, Selena was born on April 16th of 1971 in Lake Jackson, Texas. Selena's father, Abraham Quintanilla, was a former musician, and he managed and produced his family's group, Selena y los Dinos, which now, for anybody who has watched the film, it was one of my favorite things to do is watch a children-centric band be formed in their living room.
True.
I know a lot of people know this, but Selena grew up speaking English. English was her first language, but her father taught her to sing in Spanish so that she could really resonate with the Latino community. And she learned the lyrics to the songs phonetically at first and then eventually learned to speak Spanish fluently. Am I right about this, Mal?
Completely, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Phonetically, she learned the lyrics. So authentic. And throughout the years, you would see like early interviews of her, and you could listen to her broken Spanish, but that just made her so much adorable, because we know how hard, I mean, me as a foreigner, as Spanish is my first language, I know how hard it is to learn another language and dominate it and just lose the accent and whatnot and feel free to, and secure enough to, comfortable enough to have interviews and whatnot. So we just loved her about her because she always embraced that unique style that she had, being a Mexican-American, really, really proud of her heritage, saying, this is who I am. I'm an American. I was born in Texas. English is my first language, but I love Spanish and I'm going to learn it because it is part of who I am. And it's also the language that has turned me into a star and it brought food to my table, and not only me, to my whole family. So we love that about her.
There's something really special about like somebody who respects the language and culture that much, that where they've come from, and then takes the time to learn it. So I would assume that, you know, a community who is, you know, their first language is Spanish, mm-hmm. that the overall thing would be like, yes, go girl. Because it's scary. If you're doing an interview with a huge news network, a reporter, you're going on a morning TV show and you're like, oh God, I hope I don't screw this up, because.
And that really happened, you know, in the movie when J-Lo is playing her and she's actually having a press conference in my hometown in Monterrey. And they ask her how she feels, and she can't find the word for excited in Spanish. And she literally went, estoy excited, and just laughed, that beautiful big laugh that she had. And people just fell in love with her. How could you not? She was literally, we called her La Reina del Tex-Mex, the queen.
Oh my God, that's genius.
That is
genius.
Like the queen of salsa, Reina de la Salsa is Celia Cruz. The queen of Latin pop is Gloria Estefan, and La Reina del Tex-Mex is Selena. She was as big as that, you know?
Wow. Well, you know, at the age of 10, became the lead singer in her family's band, which is amazing. And she was like this larger than life personality and singer already at the age of 10, when the group started playing weddings and clubs in Texas. Like, I remember those days of singing weddings, honey. I would do it again. Somebody hire me in 2021. The band featured her brother Abraham on bass guitar and her sister Suzette on the drums. And we all know how I feel about a female drummer.
Yes.
Bring it on.
In the beginning, she didn't want to play the drums, but then little by little, she got convinced and she got hooked, and then she ended up loving it.
And she was so good. Yeah. Now, to your point, Mal, Selena was considered the queen of Tejano, or I'm going to say it, La Reina de Tex-Mex.
Yes.
Which is a type of Mexican music that incorporated other styles like country and Western.
Yes.
And she was
between Western and Mexican regional music.
Oh, which I will never forget. She has some of the soundtrack to my teenage years, because that CD, based on the film, yeah. I would be singing in my room all the time, and I still know all the words. And people also referred to her as the Mexican Madonna for those bustiers, for the dance moves. I mean,
like, also
say that again.
She
honey?
Designed herself. She was into fashion, and she loved. She really looked up to artists like Janet Jackson, Madonna, Paul Abdul, who were like in the height of their careers back then. This is like late 80s, early 90s, and she started her own clothing line. And a fascinating designer. She had a very unique style. To this day, people still imitate her. And yeah, she definitely set a trend in the fashion world too.
And there's something so amazing to watch a woman, and we, you know, coming on the heels of Women's Day. Mm-hmm. I have to say, there's something so beautiful about watching a woman who knows what she wants achieve her goals and dreams. She had so much success, and which led her in 1993 to win a Grammy for Best Mexican American Album for her album Live at the 36th Grammy Awards. And she became like incredibly, immensely popular with Tejano music fans. And at the 1987 Tejano Music Awards, she won Best Female Vocalist of the Year and Performer of the Year. And I like to mention this, she was so strikingly beautiful. Mao talked about her her laugh, which was so well known, and she had, in addition to being so talented within the world of music and design, she had this reputation of like hard work, hustle, kindness, yes, and was so respected. And that in turn is what makes this case so shitty, really, and hard to understand, because how anybody could consider themselves a super fan or, you know, a major best friend, yes, of Selena for so long could be her murderer is like unthinkable to me.
It's mind boggling. And she was so young. I mean, she was 24.
I know you do. Yeah. I can't even, I think back, I'm like, oh my God, even when I look at our script today, I think to myself, I look at the number 24 and I go, I'm 37 and I can't, that seems like a lifetime ago.
Well, she was murdered 27 years ago. So she would have been like 50. So I saw her live and I just have to, wow. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have seen some of the best. I mean, I've seen Barbara, Celine, I've seen Madonna, I've seen so many of the great ones. She was right there. I mean, was dynamite on stage. She knew how to be connecting with the audience, inviting. She was sexy. She was playful. She was innocent, youthful. She was a natural dancer too. She never took dancing in her life. And she moved like, I mean, you see the videos of her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's as I would have studied dance her whole life. And no, she was a natural, just a natural. And that raspiness of her voice. So it was very, just look at, like, talking about her right now, I'm getting goosebumps because she was, and I was so young too. I remember when she was murdered on March 31st, 1995. It's always going to be for a lot of Mexican and Mexican-American kids, the where were you at? You know, like JFK or 9/11 or like where?
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember just being in shock and my mom just saying, oh, they shot Selena. And I was like, what? So we turn on the TV and the radio and I just remember bawling, like crying. Yeah. She was an idol.
Oh, it is so, I mean, Jen, take us to now.
I will.
Meeting the worst
I
person
will.
Ever. But yes, that gives me goosebumps. Even to think that you saw her in person is so special.
So moving on to our antagonist in the story, enter Yolanda Saldívar. Yolanda became a fan of Tejano music in the mid-1980s. She originally disliked Selena because Selena had won awards that Saldívar's favorite Tejano musicians were nominated in. In mid-1991, Saldívar attended one of Selena's concerts in San Antonio, Texas with her niece. She became an ardent Selena fan. Gee, that was a fast change of heart. Just one concert. She's in. She's all in.
She's in.
She particularly enjoyed the singer's stage presence and especially liked the song, Mal, go ahead.
Baila esta cumbia un ritmo.
Exactly. Well, the day after the concert, Saldívar unsuccessfully searched newsstands for a souvenir of the event. She got the idea then of starting a Selena fan club in the San Antonio area to promote the singer, which I think we can agree that's a great idea.
Great idea.
According to Quintanilla Jr., Saldívar tried contacting him and left him 15 messages. Well, that's a red flag, maybe.
I'm waving the red flag.
Yeah, but anyway, she claims she left only three.
Of course.
I don't believe her.
So, I claim that I'm the best...
Jess, you know, this is like your
bolognese sauce maker in the world is an Italian, and I, you know, I'll claim anything.
This is like your story with your mother, Jess, where you're like, Jessica, I saw you hit your brother, but I didn't. But I saw hit him. I didn't, but I didn't do it. I didn't.
Yeah. No, she's like, did you pinch him? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, Mom. but I did. I digress, though. Sorry, Dan.
I know. No, it's all right. Now, according to Quintanilla Jr., he contacted her to discuss her idea of starting a fan club. After meeting with Saldívar, he approved of her idea and gave her permission to proceed. Saldívar became the founder and acting president of the Selena Fan Club in San Antonio in June 1991. As president, she was responsible for membership benefits and collecting $22 in exchange for products promoting Selena, a t-shirt bearing the singer's name, exclusive interviews with the band, a fact sheet about Selena, and notifications of upcoming concerts. Proceeds from the fan club were donated to charities. Suzette was the Suzette was the contact person between Yolanda and the Quintanilla family. Yolanda did not meet Selena until December 1991. The two became close friends, and the Quintanilla family trusted her. By 1994, Yolanda had signed up more than 8,000 fans.
Damn, according, girl.
I know, right?
I mean, that's according, a lot.
That's yep. a lot. And again, what do we say? This is pre-Instagram.
Pre-social media.
Yeah. According to television news reporter and anchorwoman Maria Celeste Arreras, Yolanda had become the, quote, most efficient assistant the singer ever had. Arreras wrote that people noticed how eager Yolanda was to impress Selena and did anything the singer told her to do. One person told Arreras, quote, if Selena would say jump, Yolanda would jump three times. Yolanda gave up her career as an in-home nurse for patients with terminal cancer and respiratory diseases. She decided to fully invest her time in running the Selena fan club, although she was earning less than she had as a nurse. Now, that's an honorable career.
It is.
Working with cancer patients.
Yes.
It is. And I would, yes, say that if I didn't know what this woman did to Selena in the end, because then I'm like, okay, you're working with all these patients. Like, what are you doing to them, honey? Like, now I'm like, oh God, what, how does your brain work? Like, clearly something's going on with her. And like, I would say
something clearly was not right in her wiring, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say from the get-go, but like, but what we're about to get into the nitty-gritty of when it came to how Yolanda was involved with the Quintanilla finances, which is where this all kind of shit hit the fan. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because as Mao said earlier, in 1994, Selena opened two boutiques called Selena Etc. in Corpus Christi and San Antonio, and they were equipped with in-house beauty salons. So this is like, in addition to her music career, she has this love of fashion and beauty, and she opens these boutiques. And Quintanilla Jr. thought Saldívar was a potential candidate to run the businesses because the family would be touring the country at the time. And because they all trusted her at that point, they were like, okay, this lady can do the job. She seems to be really on top of her shit. So he believed that she was the best choice because of her fan club success. The entire family agreed. And in January of 1994, Yolanda became the manager of the boutiques. And in September of 1994, Selena signed her as her registered agent in San Antonio, which means that Saldívar was authorized to write and cash checks and had access to all the bank accounts associated with the fan club and the boutiques. And that to me is a hell of a lot of trust, kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's like,
yes, your little, you know, the keys to your life. Cause that's your money is. And yeah, of course.
I mean, I could date a guy for 5 years and not do that.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, where, they'd be like, hey, can I have access to your bank account? And I'd be like, here's some Monopoly money, honey.
Like, when I got married, I was like, do we have to have a shared bank account?
Like, you know, my mom says the same thing. They do have their independent bank accounts and then a little shared one, which is, I think that's totally fine. Mal, weigh in since we're your husband, I mean, wife and girlfriend.
Exactly. you can have all my money.
Oh, thank you.
That's
honey.
Right. Good answer.
It's not a lot.
Good answer.
That's okay. It's your love we care about. Now
I want the money. No,
okay,
I'm in it for the money. I'm in it for the cash.
Oh, I mean, it is the Coco Roro after all. So Selena at this point gave Saldívar her American Express card for the purpose of conducting company business. And Saldívar, however, used it to rent things like Lincoln Town cars, and she would entertain associates in upmarket restaurants. She'd buy two cell phones, which she carried. Clearly, like, one was a burner phone, as you know, we talk about it in the true crime world. And the staff at these boutiques complained that Saldívar was always nice when Selena was around, but as soon as she would leave, she treated everyone terribly. And the employees slowly began to take all their concerns to Quintanilla Jr., who warned Selena that Saldívar might be a dangerous person. And Selena did not believe that Yolanda would turn on her. So even though her father and siblings had a habit of distrusting people, Selena, you know, remained very close to her. And Saldivar was receiving tokens of affection from Selena, which she was not accustomed to. And that was like another layer, I'm sure, of her eventual obsession, was that Selena was buying her all these gifts and really bringing her into like a best friend area of her life. And, you know, Saldivar's room was covered with posters and pictures. She would burn votive candles. She had a library of Selena videos, which she played to entertain guests. And during an interview with Saldivar in 1995, reporters from the Dallas Morning News, they said that her devotion to Selena bordered on obsession. Mm-hmm. And Saldivar told employees at Selena, etc., that she wanted to be like Selena. And that is a quote. And according to an unnamed former employee, Saldivar was possessive of her relationship with Selena. I mean, duh. And tried to distance Selena from the other employees. And this employee, who remains anonymous, said that Saldivar's goal was to have more control over the employees and Selena. Mm-hmm. And now Yolanda said her reason for distancing the employees from Selena was to shield the singer from the petty issues of managing her boutiques. And along with the responsibility of running the boutiques, Saldivar accompanied Selena on trips and even had keys to Selena's house.
Yes, when she was already married to Chris Perez.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to say, the part where she's getting Lincoln Town cars and there's upmarket restaurants and entertaining of people, I feel like when you achieve success in anything in life, it's a learned thing of how to cope with it. Because my friends and I talk about it being the woo, like, woo, I'm in the woo, everything's great. And you get a little drunk with all the good things that are happening. You get like Icarus, you fly a little too close to the sun. You know, you have to learn to keep it under control.
Yeah, I was a wicked. I remember that. Yeah, I mean, you all have that, like that kiss of like major success and what it feels like. And there is a proper way to deal with it. I've certainly fallen victim in my own life, in my own brain, mm-hmm. I should say, to having those moments where you're like, this is it for me. I'm going to make it after this. And then, oh shit, I didn't. And then you have to like recalibrate yourself because it affects your mental health to put yourself in a position where you fly too close to the sun and say like, and I'm the best person in America. And then, didn't go the way you thought. So,
which is a given pretty much in our career, in our industry and business. No, yes. So she was definitely going the wrong direction with all that. I agree. Yes.
Yeah. So moving on, starting in January 1995, Quintanilla Jr. began receiving telephone calls and letters from angry fans who claimed to have paid their enrollment fees for the fan club, but had not received the promised memorabilia. Meanwhile, at both of Selena's boutiques in San Antonio and Corpus Christi, employees noted an influx of unpaid or overdue bills arriving in the mail, for which Saldivar could provide no plausible explanation. Upon investigation, Quintanilla Jr. discovered Yolanda had embezzled more than $60,000 using forged checks from both the fan club and the boutiques. Yolanda's brother, Armando Saldivar, supposedly contacted Gomez and, quote, made up a story that Saldivar was stealing money from the fan club. Gomez then contacted, what's that? Go ahead.
What?
Do you have a comment? Oh, you're just reacting. Yes.
I mean, my comment is, what a crock of shit, honey. Oh, my God. Like,
right?
Mid-90s, $60,000. Like, that's a hell of a lot of money for one woman to be like, you know, like, I'm a squirrel. I love to collect my little nuts. But that is like, those aren't your nuts, honey.
ladies and gentlemen, new merch.
That's right, to collect my nuts. Those aren't your nuts.
Gomez then contacted one of Selena's uncles by telephone. The uncle told Quintanilla Jr., Armando said he was angry with Saldivar but did not want the reason to be made public. Later, he said he felt guilty for starting the rumor. Quintanilla Jr. held a meeting on March 9th, 1995, with Selena and Suzette Quintanilla to confront Yolanda. Quintanilla Jr. presented her with evidence concerning the missing funds. He said she simply stared at him without answering any of his questions. He further stated how Jalanda did not deny the accusations or say anything during the meeting, but was, quote, emotional at times and at other times just cool as ice. Quintanilla Jr. told Jalanda he would involve police if she did not produce evidence that disproved his accusations. When Quintanilla Jr. asked her why fans were not receiving the promised gift packages, Jalanda said those fans were trying to get the items for free.
Girl, you lying. That is a lie. That
you
cannot be.
Liar. Quintanilla Jr. Quintanilla Jr. discovered Jalanda had opened the fan club's bank account under her sister's name, Maria Elida. When asked why she had done this, she replied that the bank would not allow her to open an account in her name. She did not know the reason for this refusal. Okay, girl, sure. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm.
Country, like, if they don't let you open a bank account, there's something there. Come on.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the shade train, girl, that is like, we are side-eyeing you all the way home. There is no way that you walk into a bank and they're like, we're really like, we refuse it. And you're like, what? Why? I don't understand. Exactly. Like there, that is not, no.
Did you pinch your brother, Jalanda? No, I didn't.
Exactly. Killing It on Broadway is proud to support A-Step, artists striving to end poverty. This organization was started by our friend Mary Mitchell Campbell, musical director of Broadway and beyond, who also wrote our theme song,
Killing It. As we all know, the arts are in a challenging time right now in the U.S., and A-Step has been doing innovative things during this pandemic, including feeding thousands of families, as well as bringing the arts to children. If you are able, please go to astep.org to make a contribution to the Arts Resilience Fund so they can keep killing it by bringing smiles to the faces of children everywhere.
That's astep.org. Thanks, killers.
So Jalanda abruptly left the meeting. I'm sure she did. Could you just see her? Stop. That's when you clutch your purse to your chest and you just like folded arms. Stop. Quintanilla Jr. then banned Jalanda from contacting Selena. However, Selena did not want to end their friendship. She felt Jalanda was essential to the success of her clothing line in Mexico. Selena also wanted to keep her close because she had bank records, statements, and financial records necessary for tax purposes. So Jolana Salvidar's name remained on the payroll after the meeting, though her termination was pending on the retrieval of the financial records that were stolen. On March 25th, Selena told Suzette that she was planning on terminating Jolanda's employment, quote, soon. Mm. And this was right before a week.
I know, it's crazy to think everything that went down right before, all the red flags in a family business. That was a family business, you know, and all of a sudden she's trusting a fan who became a friend and is in the middle of all this. And I mean, you would never think that a fan is going to shoot you, like specifically who has become a confidant, your personal assistant. She has keys to your home. I mean, you've trusted her and that relationship moved and progressed so fast. I mean, they met 91 and she shot her 95. This is less than 4 years. Right.
And I mean, and it gets even crazier because after this initial meeting, Quintanilla Jr. discovered that the fan club's checks were all signed with Jolanda's sister Maria's signature in handwriting identical to Saldivar's. And he concluded that she was writing forged checks using her sister's name and then cashing them and keeping the funds. And when Quintanilla Jr. was trying to retrieve the fan club's bank statements, he said that they had mysteriously vanished. And the day after Saldivar was banned from contacting Selena, Quintanilla Jr. drove to Q Productions, which is their production studio, and chased her from the premises and told her she was no longer welcome there. And the same day, Selena and Saldivar argued by telephone, and Selena hung up and told her husband, Chris, that she could no longer trust Saldivar. And according to Quintanilla Jr., there were four attempts. There were, again, I had no idea, Mal. I don't even know if you know this, that I know Jen and I had no idea that there were four attempts to murder Selena.
Yeah, we spoke right before you logged on. And I said to Jessica, I remember seeing all the footage about this and I either forgot or never knew, but I thought it was the one. I didn't know that there were four, which kind of blew my mind.
Which ones are you talking about? Let's hear the four. Here we go.
I'm going to tell you right now. Again, this blew my mind because I had no idea. And that Selena eventually removed Saldivar's name from the boutique's bank account on March 10th of 1995. She was replaced as fan club president by a woman named Irene Herrera. And the next day, Saldivar purchased a gun at a place to shoot, which is a gun shop and shooting range in San Antonio. And she bought a Taurus Model 85 snub-nosed 38 caliber revolver. And she bought 38 caliber hollow point bullets. The bullets were designed to cause more extensive injuries than a normal bullet would. And Saldivar told the clerk she needed protection in her job as an in-home nurse because the patient's relatives had threatened her. Now, on March 13th, Saldivar went to her lawyer and wrote her resignation, which Quintanilla Jr. believed was her alibi. And the same day, Saldivar drove to Corpus Christi and checked into the Sand and Sea Motel. And Selena was in Miami, Florida at the time. Quintanilla Jr. believed this was the first attempt to kill Selena. Saldivar accompanied Selena on a trip to Tennessee while the singer finished recording a song for her crossover album. And Selena told Saldivar that some bank statements were missing and asked her to return them as soon as they returned to Texas. Saldivar repurchased the gun on March 27th and asked Selena to meet her alone in a motel room. This was the second attempt, according to Selena's family, to kill Selena. News of Selena's arrival spread, though, when they were there, and she was soon mobbed by fans, and the Quintanillas believed that her fans saved her that day because there wound up being too many witnesses, so it didn't go according to plan. Now, on March 30th, Saldivar checked into a Days Inn motel. She contacted Selena that day and told her that she had been raped and that she needed her to come to the hotel ASAP. And according to Quintanilla Jr., this was the last message they received from Saldivar. And he believed this claim was her new alibi, which she would use several times. Saldivar asked Selena to visit her at her motel room alone. However, her husband, Chris Perez, accompanied her. And according to Chris, he waited by his truck at the time when Selena went alone to Saldivar's motel room. And as Chris was driving back to their house, Selena noticed that Saldivar had failed to give her the correct bank statements she needed. So on the 30th, Saldivar tried contacting Selena through her pager. A pager, y'all. To the kids listening to this who are Gen Z, a pager is a mini computer that tells you to call people that sits on your hip in the 90s. Now, so she tried contacting her through the pager, and she desperately pled to Selena that she needed to go to the hospital that night because she was bleeding due to being raped again. And Quintanilla Jr. believed that this was the moment that Saldivar was trying to get Selena to return to the motel alone without her husband. Her husband said to her, "No, it's too late. I do not want you going out alone. I'm worried about doing that." But unbeknownst to her husband, Selena agreed to meet Saldivar the next morning. Like, there are so many attempts where she tried to call Selena with the same story over and over again. And police and Selena's family now realize the pattern of this premeditation. Let's call it premeditation.
Yeah. She wanted to have her by herself alone in a motel room.
And purchased the gun well in advance.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the damage that was done, but those GD hollow point bullets too. I often wonder what would have happened if they hadn't been hollow point. We'll get there anyway.
That's very interesting too. Like malicious,
He
got those specific bullets that they're only hunting, you know?
Okay, so now that we're all on the anxiety train, we have now come to the moment when Selena made her last phone calls, her last steps, and had her final argument with Yolanda Saldivar before the private meeting turned deadly. On March 30th, 1995, Selena contacted Leonard Wong about perfume samples he had made for her. According to Wong, Selena told him she would be meeting Yolanda the next morning to pick up the samples that had been stolen from her. The same day, she told another employee at the boutique she was expecting to fire Yolanda. The employee followed Selena to her home that night because she was concerned over the singer after their discussion about Yolanda. At 7:30 a.m. on March 31st, Selena left for the motel room. At the motel, Yolanda told Selena she had been raped in Mexico. Selena took her to Doctors Regional Hospital, where medical staff noticed Yolanda showed, quote, clear symptoms of depression. Yolanda told medical staff she had bled, quote, a little. The staff noticed Selena angrily respond that Yolanda had told her the opposite, that she was bleeding copiously the day before. Nurse Carla Anthony informed Yolanda she needed to travel to San Antonio to obtain a gynecological examination because she was, quote, a resident of San Antonio and the hospital was in Corpus and the rape occurred outside the country. While driving back to the motel, Selena told Yolanda it would be best if they stayed apart for a while to avoid upsetting Quintanilla Jr. According to Dr. Martinez, Selena had tried to contact him that morning, but he could not speak on the
telephone. Let me just stop here.
Yeah,
it's not Mauricio Martinez. That's not what? The doctor we're talking. That's not the doctor we're talking about. This is a different Dr. Martinez. Although now that Mal, you are on this show, we do like to let you know that you are now considered a doctor of crime. Okay. So you are Dr. Martinez, but not this particular.
But not this one, right?
So we just want to clear that up.
Excellent clarification. Well, as we were saying, according to the other Dr. Martinez, Selena had tried to contact him that morning, but he could not speak on the telephone because he was performing surgery.
By the way, I didn't say this before, but that, because there's so much information in this story, this is a specific doctor that Selena really trusted in her life, that she talked to, that Saldivar did not like her relationship with him. So, yeah. So this was a specific person that I think Selena really trusted and wanted to probably call him for his two cents.
For and his advice.
He was also from my hometown. He was in Monterrey.
That's right. That's right.
Right. Is it you? Are you Dr. Martinez?
It's him.
All right. Just checking.
Except he's aging in reverse. He's Benjamin Button.
Correct. Yeah.
He's.
So getting back to this, at 10 a.m., Quintanilla Jr. contacted Perez to determine Selena's whereabouts. She was due to record a song at Q Productions that morning and had not arrived. Perez called Selena on her mobile phone and reminded her of the scheduled recording. She told him she'd forgotten the session and she was, quote, taking care of one last item of business, end quote, and would be at Q Productions soon after. This was the last telephone call Selena answered and was the last time Perez spoke to his wife. At the motel room, Selena and Yolanda began arguing. Motel guests complained about loud noises coming from Yolanda's room. Selena told Yolanda she could no longer be trusted and demanded she return her financial papers. Selena then dumped Yolanda's satchel containing bank statements onto the bed and saw the gun. At 11:48 a.m., Yolanda pointed it at Selena. As Selena tried to flee, Yolanda shot her once on the lower right shoulder, severing an artery and causing a massive loss of blood. Trinidad Espinoza, the hotel's maintenance man, reported hearing a loud bang, which he likened to a car engine misfiring. Selena was critically wounded. She ran toward the lobby, leaving a trail of blood 392 feet long. Oof. She was seen clutching her chest, screaming, help me, I've been shot. Yolanda was still chasing after her, pointing the gun at her and calling her a bitch. According to motel staff, Yolanda seemed calm and went back in her room after chasing Selena. According to Carlos Morales, who was waiting outside the motel, he heard screaming and saw Selena running towards him. She grabbed Morales and screamed, "They'll shoot me again." Motel staff noticed her clothes were soaked in blood when she approached the lobby. Selena collapsed on the floor at 11:49 a.m. as Hotel General Manager Barbara Schultz telephoned the emergency services. Selena screamed at the staff, telling them, "Lock the door, she'll shoot me again." The singer identified Saldivar and her assailant and gave the number of the room where she had been shot. She was mortally wounded and terrified when she identified Saldivar, having said her last words, "Yolanda, room 158. Shauna Vela and hotel sales manager Ruben De Leon tried to stop the flow of blood. Selena's condition began to deteriorate rapidly as motel staff attended to her. De Leon tried to talk to Selena, but noticed she was beginning to lose consciousness. He said she was moaning and moving less often. De Leon noticed Selena's eyes had rolled back, and then she went limp. Oh. I started to cry in the middle of that. This is awful.
Heartbreaking.
Oh, it's completely heartbreaking. And also then you realize how premeditated somebody's mind was in doing this, because you knew exactly what you were buying and the bullets that you were buying.
And how inevitable, Jess, with the sentence you have coming up next about how quickly the ambulance arrived.
Oh, I mean, The ambulance did arrive at the scene. This is so fast, in 1 minute and 55 seconds. So that's an amazing amount. You know, we call 911. The ambulance is there. under 2 minutes. So when they get there, the paramedics, they tear away her green sweater where the bleeding was taking place, and they applied a Vaseline gauze to Selena's wound, which stopped the surface bleeding. But at this point, her heartbeat was now very slow, and a paramedic at the scene performed cardiopulmonary resuscitation to keep her blood circulating. And paramedic Richard Fredrickson said it was too late when he arrived in the lobby, and he found, quote, a thick pool of blood from her neck to her knees all the way around both sides of her body. And Fredrickson at this time could not locate a pulse. When he placed his fingers on her neck, he felt only muscle twitches because of all the blood loss. And paramedics tried inserting an IV needle into Selena, but her veins had collapsed because of the massive blood loss. And this, you know, results in low or no blood pressure, making an insertion of any IV super difficult. So at this time, the local police close off Navigation Boulevard around the hotel. And when the paramedics delivered Selena to Corpus Christi Memorial Hospital at 12 o'clock p.m., her pupils were fixated and dilated. There was absolutely no evidence of any neurological function. She had no vital signs, and the doctors declared her clinically brain dead. And they, at the time, they were able to establish a very erratic heartbeat, which was long enough for them to transfer her to the trauma room. And the doctors began several blood transfusions in an attempt to reestablish a circulation after opening Selena's body and finding massive internal bleeding, which, of course, as we talked about before, that was the point of buying these hollow bullets. That's what these bullets do. And her right lung, Selena's right lung was damaged. Her collarbone was shattered and her veins were completely emptied. And doctors did all they could. They widened her chest opening. They administered drugs directly to her heart. They applied pressure to all of her wounds. And Dr. Lewis Elkins, who was the cardiac surgeon at the time, said he saw the doctors making heroic efforts to revive her and described the singer as being extremely contused and shredded. And the right side of, he said the right side of her chest, there all the tissue was completely ripped, and a breathing tube was administered after Selena stopped breathing on her own when a clamp was placed on her artery on her collarbone. And after 50 minutes, the doctors realized that the damage had been done. It was irreparable. They pronounced Selena Quintanilla Perez dead at 1:05 p.m., 16 days before her 24th birthday. So she was almost 24 at the time. And the cause of death was indeed blood loss and cardiac arrest. And during the third hour after the shooting, an autopsy was performed, which happened just due to the public and media interest. And so what was revealed is that the bullet, the one bullet that she shot, had entered Selena's upper right back, which was near her shoulder blade, and it passed through her chest cavity. It severed her subclavian artery and exited her right upper chest. And it took minutes, just minutes, from the point of impact of that bullet, according to the autopsy, where she lost virtually all of the blood in her body. And that is what contributed to her death. Right. And doctors said that, you know, if the bullet had been just 1 millimeter higher or 1 millimeter lower, the wound would have been, she probably would have lived. The wound would have been much less severe.
A millimeter, yeah. For the sake of a millimeter, right?
Or another type of bullet, right?
Yeah. That's right. That's yeah. right.
But the story does not end there. It gets even crazier and more dramatic as the hours go on. After the shooting, Jolanda entered her red 1994 GMC pickup truck and tried to leave the motel parking lot. Motel employee Rosario Garza saw Jolanda leave her room with a wrapped towel. It was later thought she was going to Q Productions to shoot Quintanilla Jr. and others who were waiting for Selena. However, she was spotted by a responding police officer in a vehicle. The officer left his vehicle, drew his gun, and ordered her out of the truck. She did not comply. She backed up and parked adjacent to two cars. Her truck was then blocked in by the police vehicle. Jolanda picked up the pistol, pointed it at her right temple, and threatened to commit suicide. A SWAT team and the FBI Crisis Negotiation Unit were brought in. Larry Young and Isaac Valencia began negotiating with Jolanda. They ran a telephone line to their base of operations adjacent to her pickup truck as the standoff continued. Lead negotiator Young tried to establish a rapport with her and persuade her to give herself up. Valencia suggested the shooting was accidental. Jolanda later changed her story, saying the, quote, gun went off, end quote, by itself. She spoke to relatives in addition to speaking with police. Motel guests were ordered to remain in their rooms until police escorted them out. Later that afternoon, police drained the gasoline from the gas tank of her car and turned on floodlights. After the standoff entered its fourth hour, Valencia succeeded in getting Yolanda to confess that she had intended to shoot herself. Yolanda said that when she placed the gun to her own head, Selena tried to tell her not to kill herself. When Selena opened the door to leave, Yolanda said she told her to close it. She also said the gun went off when Selena left. Mm-mm. I know. During the sixth hour, Yolanda agreed to give herself up, but when she saw a police officer pointing a rifle at her, she panicked, ran back to her truck, picked up the revolver, and pointed it at her head again. Yolanda surrendered after more than 9 hours. By then, hundreds of Selena's fans had gathered at the scene. Many wept as police took Yolanda away. A press conference was called within hours of Selena's murder. Yolanda had not yet been named in media reports. Assistant Police Chief Ken Bung and Quintanilla Jr. told the press the possible motive was Selena's intention to terminate Yolanda Saldivar's employment.
Mm-hmm. So, Mal, where were you? Like, that's what I want to know. What do you remember? Where were you when it happened?
I was home in my home in Monterrey, where I grew up. And because this was, we found out about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. They said in the radio, they shot Selena, you know? La Reina del Tex-Mex, they just shot her. And then hours later, I was home and we turned on all the news stations and we saw the live broadcast of this woman in the pickup truck with her gun, with the gun in her head. And then Selena was confirmed dead. So back and forth, we went back and forth to this woman and the police and the SWAT team. And it was very dramatic and tragic and scary at the same time. And we literally thought she was going to shoot herself on live television. And I remember watching the Mexican channels, all of them, and it was everywhere. And fans were already just crying. Her music was playing all over. This was just literally hours after she had been shot and killed and pronounced dead. And it was crazy, 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 crazy. And from that day, probably for like a month or two, nobody talked about another thing.
We're rounding third base here at this story. Within 20 minutes of Yolanda's surrender, she was taken down to the police station in Corpus Christi. She was placed in an interrogation room with investigators Paul and Ray Rivera. Now, Paul Rivera investigated homicide since 1978. He had informed Saldivar of her right to an attorney, which she waived. So when police investigators surrounded Saldivar's truck, she had cried out, quote, "I can't believe I killed my best friend." Mm-hmm. And I think we all remember that from the film. I was like, oh my God. I mean, even though it was a film, I felt like it was absolutely 100% real. And within hours of her saying, "I can't believe I killed my best friend," she was saying that the shooting was completely accidental. Now, her bond was initially set at $100,000, but the DA, Carlos Valdez, persuaded the presiding judge to raise it to $500,000. And when bail was announced, fans asked why the death penalty had not been sought right away. And the Nueces County Jail was deluged with death threats. And there were public calls for vigilante justice. So some gang members in Texas, they were reported to have taken up collections to raise the bond for Saldivar so they could kill her when she was released.
Yeah. Fans of Selena just so mad at her. And
I mean, So in prison, right? In prison, we hear these things happening all the time, you know, of when people go into prison and commit really heinous crimes where they face death threats from the inmates. That was no different in this situation. She received so many death threats, and the Mexican mafia, who is a dominant gang in the Texas penal system, reportedly placed a price on her head, and they spread the word that anyone who committed the crime within the prison would be a hero. And Saldivar's crime was punishable by up to 99 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. I think 10,000 doesn't seem like enough, but you know, whatever. Saldivar was kept at Nueces County Jail under a suicide watch before her trial. And though she said the killing was accidental, on October 25th of 1995, a jury deliberated for only 2 hours before finding her completely guilty of murder. And she received the maximum sentence of life in prison with no eligibility of parole for 30 years. And by the way, that parole eligibility is coming up, y'all, in 2020. So So on November 22nd of 1995, she arrived at the Gatesville unit, now the Christina Crane unit in Gatesville, Texas, for processing. And as of 2018, Saldivar is serving her sentence in Gatesville at the Mountain View unit, which is operated by the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. She will be eligible for parole on March 30th of 2025 because of multiple internal death threats from incarcerated Selena fans. Saldivar was placed in isolation, and she spends 23 hours a day alone in her 9-foot by 6-foot cell. And in 2002, under a judge's order, the gun that was used, and I did not know this, but the gun that was used to kill Selena was destroyed, which fans actually were very upset about, that it was destroyed. And the pieces were thrown in Corpus Christi Bay. And that, my friends and fellow killers, is the murder of Selena Quintanilla. And it's still hard to wrap my head around all of these years later.
And heartbreaking, you know, thinking about it gives me goosebumps, and it breaks my heart to know of where she could have been today. Immediately, specifically, even Jennifer Lopez has said publicly that when she made the movie and she played her and she was in all those arenas and like embodied her and all that, she knew I need to record and cut an album, and I need to be performing live and do this. And to this day, she pays tribute to her in her concerts in a beautiful way. And I cannot think of J-Lo without thinking of Selena. It's very...
100%. Same. We talked about this before you came on, and I'm so glad you brought this up. I said to Jessica, I remember J-Lo on In Living Color. She was a fly girl. She was an actress, but this definitely put her on the map. And I said, I wonder what that is like. I respect J-Lo's work ethic. She works so hard, and she has sustained this career over all these years. But what does that do to your mind and soul to know that the thing that put you on the map was based on this tragedy and loss of this other human being? That must be very reverent in your life story.
Yeah, specifically somebody so beloved, and Selena's a mentor for her. And that's why she, to this day, pays tribute to her. And I think it was 2015, 2016 in Miami. I think it was the Billboard, Latin Billboard Awards, where she did a very famous tribute of like 4 or 5 of her greatest hits, Selena's hits. And Los Dinos were there playing with her. So I could just imagine Suzette in the drums, Chris playing guitar, and Selena's brother. What, just talking about it right now, I get goosebumps.
You gave me goosebumps.
It's like you watch J-Lo, and to know that she does things like pays tribute or says, you know what? I know I'm here because of the life this young girl led. And that is so lovely to think about.
Before we let you go, Mao, I just want to say this too, to those fans who wonder why Yolanda wasn't given the death penalty and are mad about it. I think this is an important time to remember what this past year has been like here in quarantine. And I just want you all to think about this. 23 hours a day, she's in a 9-by-6-foot cell. Can you imagine doing the quarantine every year for the rest of your life in that small a space? I think I would have wished they would have killed me. I don't know that I could do it psychologically. That would mess you up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you see it every now and then. I jump into YouTube and like I wonder how she done any interviews. And she does every now and then. Like, somebody will go into the jail, and she will do either in English or Spanish. And you could just see her, how she's aged, and she's getting to an older woman. And you just see the pain in her face. I have mixed feelings, because there's always some empathy towards the mental health issue. Was she depressed? Was she not diagnosed? Like, what could have happened? But then you think of what she did, and obviously there's pain and there's anger, you know, as a fan. And I understand all these fans that are angry, but it's a very interesting case.
You're right. You're right. I'm so glad you brought this up. You would think, what do I need to do? I think I need to go to a hospital. I know that there's embarrassment surrounded by it and stigma to this day. And so if she didn't feel like she could do that, or if she felt embarrassed by it, or if she was so taken aback by somebody finding out what she had done to all of these financial records within the Quintanilla family, if that was a thing, and she was just, and she chose to go the route of like embarrassed anger versus let me figure out why this is. Apologize.
Why this is? Why do I feel this? Why am I buying a gun?
Why am I buying a gun? Why am I lying about it?
There's even there's books about it and there's TV shows about it now. She's then said that it was Selena's father who had not harassed her, but threatened her, and who ordered those supposedly men who raped her in my hometown, which was, we all think it's a lie because there's no proof. And then went to the doctor and they told Selena, I don't think she was raped. So there's all these fabrications and it's all mystery. We'll never know the truth.
Well, and even if it was true, let's say that horrible crime did occur, even that is not a justification for the embezzlement. And it seems like everything was a distraction to gain sympathy or to get Selena alone because she knew she was going to be fired. And one of the things that really chaps my ass about all of this is the lack of responsibility for the embezzlement. And the deflection of anger and, you know, and then this combination of this stalker meets this abuser and trying to control her and gain more of her and absorb her identity. And it just spiraled and there you go. But it's really horrible. I mean,
back then, the movie, the Whitney Houston movie with Kevin Costner had already come out. Like there's all these fiction about, there's all this fiction always about superstars and like stalkers and fans that are crazy or whatnot, but we had never had something like this happen. And it's just very tragic, you know? After that, specifically Latino artists treat their fans differently. There has to be limits.
I completely get why the community would hunker down and be like, I'm not going to allow this to happen again, because it's a really scary thing when you decide to let somebody into your life who seems very, very good natured at the beginning. And, you know, but you don't know people. You don't know when somebody
walks into your
life and says, I want to do X, Y, and Z for you. And then you say, okay, here you go. And all of a sudden it becomes the single white female.
I own you. You're only successful because of me. All that. Yeah.
Yes. I know exactly how that feels. Like,
I know. We know. Yeah.
So you know what, Mal? What? I cannot think of someone better to discuss this with us, because first of all, you're so wonderful in your own right. And you have such a wealth of knowledge about this. And this is like, it's a very, very
personal.
It's very personal and it's special to so many people who are going to listen to this, to be able to hear from someone who got to experience her talent and who got to sit there and really, you know, when you were growing up, you know, learn of what happened. And it's really a very deep thing. So I appreciate you like taking your time to do this and then also allowing yourself to have memories flood back to you, because I know how difficult that is.
No, thank you. It's been very interesting to go back. I hadn't thought about many things that came back until today, but I love that Selena's legacy lives to this day. Like there's just a new Netflix series came out a couple of months ago. New generations are being introduced to her. And it's like, she's bigger than ever, you know? And I love, you know, how timeless she is, but no matter the tragic ending that she had. I think her spirit, And I love that. I love that about her, you know, and her music to this day is my go-to. When I wake up in the morning, like I play Bidi Bidi Bam Bam, Amor Prohibido, because they're so ages and they're so, they just want to make you dance. They want to make you dance, you know, they make you dance.
And that's I'm literally, as soon as he said Bidi Bidi Bam Bam, my shoulders.
They're going. All of us. I love that you found that you're looking for the light in all of this. Thank you, Dr. Martinez. We appreciate you.
Oh yeah, honey. One of the best doctors we've had on this show, for God's sake.
So thank you so much. And we adore you. Thank you for dating me. Thank you for marrying Jess.
Thank you. I love you both.
Bye. Get out of here. Oh my God. He's so wonderful.
Oh, that was great. Oh, Jessica, he's my boyfriend and your husband is terrific.
Could we have found a better man to take us both on in these times?
No.
I and all of and killers out there, if you want Mao to be one of, if you want him to be your husband or your boyfriend, like inquire within, we can send you an application. But as, like, as of right now, we love you to the moon and back. And we thank you so much for listening today. We know that this was a big one, and we hope, you know, for anyone who wasn't completely enamored or didn't know the information before about Selena, welcome to the incredible legacy and life of Selena. She is and was ethereal. So sleep well tonight, y'all. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content, and follow us on Instagram at Killing It On Broadway and Twitter at Killing It On B-Way.
Subscribe to us for free wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It On Broadway is a production of Killing It On Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.